And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, September 2nd. 54 degrees right now in Old Elm Park City. Under some clouds, Heber City reporting 60 degrees, also some clouds. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy hump day, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. Look for mostly sunny skies across the area. It's going to be a beautiful day with those below average temperatures hanging around. I've got high temperatures climbing to around 70 degrees. That's it for us in the Park City area. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-70s. Still not bad in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Thursday, look for mostly sunny skies. Temperatures will be in the low 70s for your Thursday afternoon in Park City. We'll be in the mid-70s again for us in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go throughout your Wednesday and Thursday, and even into your Friday, we're going to be seeing some of those gusty winds at times. Winds could gust anywhere between 20 to 30 miles per hour during the afternoon hours. Isolated gust up to 40 miles per hour possible by Friday afternoon as a weak boundary moves by to our north. Speaking of your Friday, we're looking at mostly sunny to partly sunny skies across the Wasatch Back. Temperatures, once again, will climb into the low to mid 70s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 70s in the Heber Valley. Heading into the upcoming weekend, well, we're going to start to track some changes. Saturday will be a nice day with partly sunny skies. Highs will be in the low 70s in Park City. Highs will be in the upper 70s to near 80 in the Heber Valley. Once we move into your Sunday, well, we'll see increasing clouds out there and a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms popping up, especially by the time we get towards your Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening. We're going to be watching some tropical moisture beginning to move our way from what is now Tropical Storm Marie down in the eastern Pacific, just south of Cabo. That's going to be moving to the north, and that moisture will get pulled into Utah as we head towards Sunday into Monday. Rain chances will go up accordingly, so scattered showers and storms Sunday afternoon and evening, but showers and thunderstorms are looking likely as we get into your Labor Day on Monday. So any outdoor plans, plan accordingly. Highs only around 70 in Park City with highs in the mid-70s for your Labor Day. Even cooler, upper 60s by Tuesday in Park City with highs in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley with isolated storms. Let's look at your latest forecast from the ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, we'll be talking Miner's Day, kind of a soggy one, with Park City Rotary Club President Neil Hafer and member Kristen Wright. We'll have details about how you can purchase Running with the Balls, as well as the full lineup of Miner Day activities. Then a Park City Council meeting preview with City Manager Adam Lenhard, and we'll be talking to Sustainability Director Luke Carton about last week's Thames Canyon fire. Finally, Park City Friends of the Library board members Rachel Solman and Kathy Lenigan with details on Miner's Day used book sale coming up Sunday and Monday. Then stay tuned for this, the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Meg Bartley from the Department of Anthropology at the University of Utah. She'll fill us in on a fascinating new trend and fun pastime called urban foraging. Then chiropractor Courtney Cosley and physical therapist Milica McDowell explore the vast benefits of walking in their new book, Walk, Rediscover the Most Natural Way to Boost Your Health and Longevity, One Step at a Time. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, of course, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Taking a look at some local news, two requests to rezone and develop property in the Stuyvesant Basin could be decided today. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the projects could bring more than 400 units of housing to the area.
The Summit County Council may vote on rezoning and redeveloping Junction Commons Wednesday after months of talks with representatives of the outlet mall. The council will also discuss and could vote on a mixed-use project in Silver Creek Estates, says Community Development Director Peter Barnes.
Silver Creek is probably a little simpler. In my mind, there's no reason why the council could not approve both of these projects tonight. I'm not sure if they would. I think over the number of times the outlets has been discussed, hopefully all the questions have been asked and answered.
The proposal from outlets owner Singerman Real Estate has shrunk from 510 to 340 total units of housing because of the council's traffic concerns. Of that, 220 units would be affordable. The upper loop of stores would be demolished to make room for more residential neighborhood and two parking structures. Apartments would fill in the lower parking lot too, with new ground floor businesses. The Crossroads at Silver Creek project is smaller by comparison. Columbus Pacific Development hopes to build 90 housing units, a 4,000-square-foot nonprofit building, and 32,000 square feet of other commercial space at the intersection of Interstate 80 and U.S. Highway 40. Like the Outlets project, the Silver Creek proposal requires a rezone, which is why the county council has the final say.
The applicant has all fingers and toes crossed again in the hope they'll get some kind of positive recommendation on the rezone. After that, there will be a sequence of other approvals necessary. There's a subdivision approval that needs to be done, and you know, all the then details and construction documents need to be created at that point.
A link to attend Wednesday's council meeting is available at kpcw.org. Summit County and Columbus Pacific Development are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The 130th annual Park City Miners Day celebration honors the town's rich mining history and will feature a wide variety of activities and events for all ages this Monday, September 7th at City Park. It's also the community fundraiser Running with the Balls. In the studio with details, I have the chair of Miners Day, Kristen Wright, and Rotarian. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Leslie.
Yeah, so how did the Rotary Club get roped into hosting Miners Day? Any idea?
You know, actually, it's been happening for so long, I'm not exactly sure of how we got involved, but we've been doing it for as long as I can remember. My children, who are now grown and 30, were doing the kids' games in the park when they were three.
Okay. So do all three of Park City's Rotary Clubs get involved in this, or is this just kind of the Noon Club?
Primarily, it's Park City Rotary, the Noon Club. But we do have another Rotary Club doing the Park City 5K. Mm-hmm. So, and also, you know, all of the Rotary Clubs, our main goal is to do service to the community, and we always work together in that goal.
Awesome. All right, so the weather isn't looking great for Monday. Do you guys have weather plans, or do you just assume there is no bad weather, people just make poor clothing choices?
That's good. You know, I would say bring a rain jacket. Fortunately, you know, we're a mountain community and we know how to dress for the weather. But this thing goes on rain or shine.
Okay. So let's get a rundown of the day's activities. Starting at 7:30, running through 9:30 is Miner's Day breakfast. And
yeah,
this is, again, another nonprofit helping out here.
You bet. St. Mary's actually does breakfast. And then we've got Rotary putting on Park City 5K.
Okay, and that starts where?
Oh, it's all in the park. Yep.
Okay.
And just so people know, you can go onto our website at parkcityminers.org and find all the details if I miss something.
Okay. As you mentioned, this is a fundraiser for the Twilight Rotary Club. There is no registration fee, I noticed, but they are asking for donations. Yeah. Okay, and also it's bring your dog, because there will be a pet costume contest?
Yes, and that, it's really fun, and we are very much a dog community, and I think that's a really wonderful way to get people involved.
All right, and then from 9:30 to noon, you have what's called the Big Baller Club, will be open on Main Street. Is this relatively new?
It is actually very new. So this is a new way to experience the running of the balls and the parade. And we're reaching out to people who may want a little bit of a VIP experience. But also, we're doing that. You know, the main motivation, again, is to generate that money for our community grants. So any dollar that you pay to be in the Big Baller Club, that goes straight to our community grants. So that Big Ballers Club, you get a little bit of swag. You get a Silver Strike ball, which is a $100 ball. And that Silver Strike run has a $3,000 prize, and we have a very limited number of balls. It's 200. You also get a couple cocktails or mocktails, breakfast buffet, excellent parade at viewing and ball run. And it's located this year at Trago Tequila Club, which is in the Memorial Building. If you look at the Memorial Building, it's on the north side where that patio is. So they'll have the patio all ready to go for the Big Ballers.
Okay, where old Shucks used to be, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. It's the old Shucks.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And again, this is like $375 per person or $550 per couple. That is VIP.
Yep.
The Big Bucks Club. Okay. And then, of course, the... before the parade at 10:30, you have got Running of the Balls. And where can you purchase these balls?
You can, well, The Rotarians will be at Park City Market and on site the day, you know, on Miner's Day. But you can purchase them today at parkcityminer'sday.org. And we have a number of packages, 1 ball, 3 balls, 20 balls. And these are, you know, obviously the less expensive, very easy to enter balls. We have wonderful prizes, about 30 different packages of prizes. Our top prize is a Deer Valley season pass. Thank you to Deer Valley for that. There's also restaurant coupons, service coupons around the community. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So is that the $3,000 prize, the ski pass? Or because you had mentioned that for those bigger, the silver balls.
The Silver Strike Run. The Silver Strike Run has a single $3,000 travel package. That's the Silver Strike Run. So it's a more expensive ball at $100, but you have a higher probability of winning. And then for our regular running of the balls, we sell 15,000 balls. And that's why we have so many different prizes. And the top prize in the regular running of the balls is the Deer Valley Pass.
Got it. All right. This is, again, going to happen rain or shine.
Rain or shine.
And it's your biggest fundraiser, I think, huh?
Oh, yes. This year alone, Park City Rotary has given $150,000 back to the community. And our primary fundraiser is the running of the balls.
Okay, so how much do you hope to raise then with the 15,000 balls?
Well, in the past, we have cleared 100,000. And of course, we always hope to build on what we've done previously. Unfortunately, rain, you know, that hinders our ball sales, but you know what? We will be out there with a smile. And I hope folks will buy. And also, you can always buy online right now.
Okay. So how is the money distributed then with these community grants?
Oh, really good question. So we have two committees in Rotary. And one committee is the large grant committee, and the other one is the small grants committee. Our small grants, we usually get about a budget of approximately $25,000 to $30,000 a year. And the committee can distribute that to nonprofits in the community as they see fit. One year, for example, we gave out about a dozen smaller grants. But one year, we also gave three $5,000 grants to different communities. We have, and then the large community grant, there's a large budget for that. And so that would have been the balance of last year's budget. And we gave to three different very popular that everybody would have heard of. And I don't have them right here, but it would be, we often give to Peace House. We give to Summit County Clubhouse.
I think KPCW receives,
KPCW.
Yeah, thank you. Uh-huh. And I know that the Egyptian Theater has also got a special ball run being done for their 100th anniversary, but this is going to be separate from that. They're going to have their own ball run before or after.
Yes, this is really exciting. So we are partnering with the Egyptian and Randy to do a special ball run, one time only, and Randy has purchase special balls with the Egyptian logo, the marquee on the front. So he has a limited number. There are just 200 of these. And the prize for those balls is our Faro memberships and coupons for use at the Egyptian. So they're $250 each. You can buy those. He's more than half sold out at this point. You can buy those also on our website and through Randy.
Okay, and as always, we've got a flyover. That's happening just before the parade. We're hoping at about 11 o'clock, but it's usually a little bit later than that.
Right, and weather, you know, that's weather dependent. But John Holland and Skip Slyfield over at the Utah Commemorative Air Force has always, they donate the fuel, the time. We're so appreciative, and the community loves them. And they actually do two passes usually.
Yeah. It's always exciting. Mm-hmm. And of course, the parade itself, are you still accepting parade applications?
Oh, absolutely. Right up until 5 o'clock tonight. And Michelle Rankin, another Rotarian, has been working so hard on the parade this year. I think it might be our best one ever. There are some really fun entries.
Okay. Any idea how many you've got? And I know you allow politicians in the Miner State
Parade.
Yes,
we do. We do, and we did reevaluate that this year. And the thing is, people said, you know what, it's part of the Miner's Day Parade. You know, you hate to step on a tradition, you know. It's an off year, not as many this year. But yes, we do allow political entries. And there, I'm going to say roughly 40 right now, 40 entries.
Okay, great. And then once the parade makes its way down Main Street and Park Avenue, then we all kind of gather at City Park, and you've got lots happening there. Tell us what's going on.
Okay, kids games right after the parade at the park. And I mentioned before, my kids did it when they were little. It's so family friendly. Rotarians are putting that on. Kevin Kennedy heads that up. So thankful for that. Then at 12:30, we have the mucking and drilling. So if you haven't seen mucking and drilling, I really think it's important that you go and see this. This year we have a full slate of minors. We had a waiting list. Super excited about that. And we have the folks over at Mountain Valley Stone, 8-ton rock they've given us. It is beautiful. You can go see it right now at the Mahwini parking lot. So we'll have the mucking also, and the city has been setting up the mucking track. That starts at 12:30. Usually goes for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, and I think the rock is, if somebody wants to buy it, they can?
Yes. Again, just a new way to try and bring more money in for our community grants. You can go to our website and follow the links, and you can bet on this rock. If you want to see how these rocks look, you've got to have, I live in Old Town. It ain't going to work at my house. But if you live in a place where you have larger lots, it's going to work. You can see them right up Payday Drive, go up near Rotary Park. You'll see several there. Last year's rock is currently on Crestline Drive in the front yard. So they're around, and it's kind of a sign to me. It's like, okay, I'm a local. I have a giant mucking, drilling rock.
Okay. Again, there'll be food trucks. There'll be the beer and liquor garden in City Park. Any idea what food trucks are showing up?
I don't. Kate McChesney with the Park City Sunday Market, she coordinates with the city to do a lot of the logistics, and she does all those trucks.
Okay. What about the bands? Because you've got music from about
9 to 4.
I do
know what the bands are, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but they are on our website.
Okay. And then this has been kind of a recent addition, the Miners and Memories History Presentations at Miner Hospital. So what happens here? This is all, again, noon to four.
Oh, yes. This is something that Sally Elliott has been heading up for us. If you many people have not even been into our Miners Hospital. They weren't here when it was a library, and they weren't here when it was a hospital. So this is an opportunity. It's open, and you can go into the hospital, and docents there that our Rotarian volunteers will give you a tour around the hospital, tell you what it used to be like when it was a hospital. And I have been over there. It is a fantastic, fantastic time. Well worth your time to stop by.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about Miner's Day?
Oh, my gosh. Can I mention our sponsors?
Sure.
Okay. we have Kujeski Family Foundation, Parson, Beal and Latimer, Intermountain Health, Park City Home Theater, Don McKenna Group, Deer Valley, Extel Development Company, Mountain Valley Stone, Abode Park City, Fairweather Builders, Summit Party Rentals, and Park City Storage. We really appreciate them helping us to sponsor and put on this community event.
So I'm going to say Park City Storage is the one that stores all of the running with the ball equipment.
Oh, yes. And there are 36 buckets of balls. Yeah. Yes. And yeah, they help us out with that. They also give us the box truck that we carted around with. Yeah. Super
okay.
helpful.
And I also want you to, if you were at yesterday's meeting, that the Rotary presented its Citizen yeah. of the Year Award. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. It was just a wonderful ceremony. Rhonda Sedaris was the Professional Citizen of the Year. And
Cheryl
Soschek, I have such a hard time saying her last name, was the Volunteer of the Year. It was a beautiful ceremony. Those are both fantastic women who have been contributing to this community since the 70s.
Yeah. Okay. I think we got it all then. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Kristen Wright, again, the chair of the Park City Rotary Miners Day Celebration. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Council meets Thursday, starting a work session at 4:30 to discuss the water rate consulting contract award. In the studio with a preview of that and more, I have Park City Manager Adam Lenhard, along with Sustainability Director Luke Carton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Adam, the work session will outline the proposed scope of work and timeline for a water rate study. And I guess I was just thinking, didn't we just do a water study? Because recently, within the last couple of years, I think, the city recently increased the rates on commercial businesses. Those prices jumped like 20%.
We've actually made adjustments to our water rate schedule in each of the previous 4 years. Going back to 2017, that's when we did our last comprehensive water rate study. So it's been a little while since we last did this. We did do an internal assessment that was fairly broad in 2023. After that assessment, that's when we made those incremental adjustments over the past 4 years. We felt like when we talked with the council about this back in April, the council indicated that they thought it was probably time to take a broader look to make sure that the water rates are sustainable for the future. So this study, if approved by the council, would take us through the next 5 years. And the goal is to make sure that, again, the revenues are sustainable, that water rates are fair across all classes of customers. We do have a fairly complicated rate structure, I would say more so than many other cities, but it's just a result of how our community has grown and developed over the years. And we want to make sure that water rate adjustments align with council priorities and also industry best practices.
Okay. The cost and the timeline on this study then, if it's approved?
To be determined, and that's what we'll discuss on Thursday.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the water rates for fiscal year 2027. Again, they went up about their typical 4% that we've seen over the last several years.
Correct. We did have a couple of adjustments to a few of our customer classes.
Yeah, and maybe you can explain that, because I don't understand why water rates have to continually go up. I understand if you use more water, you absolutely should pay for more water, but the city owns the water rights. They're paid for. It's right. It's what are we paying for? We've got a bond that had paid for the $160 million plus waterworks project that we did.
Correct. That bond came with significant debt service that we have to pay every year. So our water rates do help pay for the debt service on the bond for the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant. We do have significant costs in order to provide water to the community, and those costs are going up every year. We've seen significant increases in our materials, fuel, storage, pumping, you name it. Across the board, we have absolutely felt the impacts of inflation, and so that is a cost that all of us as ratepayers do need to pay. The water rate has two different parts. It's the base rate, which is basically it covers the water being provided to your home. So when you turn on the faucet, water comes out. That's the base rate, its availability. And then the amount of water that you use, that's the consumption portion of the rate. But absolutely, water is expensive to treat, to procure. The water rates themselves, we do pay for those on an ongoing basis. We lease a lot of those from Salt Lake City. That's an ongoing payment.
Okay. And then we also have that stormwater fee attached to our water bills, which also continues to go up. Again, for the same reasons, inflationary?
Same reasons, yep.
Okay, let's see. Let's take a look at the June 2026 sales tax report. The month of June shows taxes up a third of 1%. The rolling quarter from April to June show revenue down almost 6% from the same period last year, and year to date from last July through this June down 4%. So anything concerning to you looking at those numbers?
Yes and no. I would say, given the historically poor winter that we had, to finish year over year at 4% down, that would be the good news. That would be the silver lining. But we should be real about what that means if it continues. A 4% drop is not insignificant. And our budget is heavily reliant on sales tax revenue for a lot of the services we provide. If we had another year that was 4% or another one of 4%, absolutely, that is material, that matters, and we will have to make adjustments.
Okay. I guess how do those losses impact the city's budget, if at all at this point? I mean, I guess contingencies just make up for it?
A little bit. We are required by law to have a balanced budget every year. We can only spend what we bring in. And there are various ways to do that. But in this case, for the 4% drop year over year, we did cut some spending. We made some additional transfers from our fund balance. So we have had to make adjustments to that, and we'll have to continue to do that if sales taxes go in the direction that we anticipate. We're seeing significant sales tax leakage outside of the city. And so that's something that we're very aware of and concerned of and making plans for the future.
Yeah, now the transient room tax, and this is what is being used to fund kind of the Bonanza Park 5 acres, right? I mean, the
Correct.
Purchase of that and then just the development as well. That is down almost 7% for year to date. So how does that impact the, I guess you took out a bond for the payment of the property?
When the land was acquired, correct, and we're paying that bond every year. The TRT is the proposed funding source if that project is to move forward. And if the projections look like they're going to be changing or decreasing, then that's going to impact any type of bonding activity we might pursue.
Okay. And this has been discussed on and off over the years because, as you said, we are so reliant on sales taxes as part of the city's makeup of budgets. And that has then alleviated any increase in our property tax rate. Is that something that needs to be looked at?
Oh, it could. That's a great policy question. As of right now, there's no consideration. I haven't heard any conversations amongst the council about adjusting our property tax rate. It's interesting. Our rate itself is quite low compared to other communities. With that being said, I would want to be clear that that doesn't mean that the dollar amounts being paid by our residents in property taxes are low, and that's tied directly to the property values that we have here, those assessed values from the county. So certainly it's not negligible the amount that people are paying for property tax. As of right now, though, there are not any conversations to increase that property tax rate.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention? I know there was police officer, and there's some police reorganization happening.
Correct. We do have some swearing ins for a few of our two new police officers who are coming back to the organization. But another one that's going to take place is a new lieutenant in the police department. Clinton is going to be promoted or has been promoted to the emergency manager position. And we're excited about that. And then we've got a sergeant being promoted to take his place.
Okay, great. Luke, let's bring you into the conversation. We wanted to talk a little bit about the fire last week there, the Thames fire. I mean, it was lightning that struck a tree at about midnight, and then what? I mean, just was smoldering until the flames went up and the 9/11 calls came in?
Yeah, exactly. So as everyone saw in town, that plume of smoke that popped up around 6:20 a.m. So lightning strikes on trees happen actually fairly regularly, but most of the time, they don't do anything, or it's just a single tree that kind of smolders along. But the Thames Fire, as it was called, which was just off of Pinecone Ridge, kind of between Pinecone Ridge and Mid Mountain, up. So if you ride the Quicksilver Gondola, if you jumped off of that mid station and hiked up. But about 6:20, that couple of trees started torching, right? Everyone could see the fire, and then it's settled back down a little bit. We had drone footage from RPD at about 6:50-ish, to start seeing, hey, this isn't a clump of trees that we want to just kind of make sure we understand. Park City Fire responded. They hiked some crews in. And by about just before 8 o'clock, the call was made to bring in some additional resources too, some aerials, a helicopter. So at that point, talking with Chief Emery, Park City Mountain staff, our PD as well, we made the difficult decision, but truthfully, I think it was the right decision to say, hey, let's shut down the Park City side of Park City Mountain Resort for the trail side, because when you look at on an average kind of weekday in the summertime, we'd have over 1,000 trail users going up there by 10 a.m. And because it was on Mid Mountain and Pine Cone, right, when you look at the Mid Mountain Trail, there's over 20 access points to it too. So the thought was, hey, let's start with a broader closure just to keep everyone safe, because again, it's easier to go big and soften it in instead of the other way of trying to figure out how to close that down. So by 7:50, after discussing with everyone, the call was made, hey, let's just do a trail closure on the Park City side, give the fire crews a little bit of breathing room, and then when the helicopter would roll in around 9:30, again, give them space to work, because the helicopter would be based out of First Time. Depending on winds in that side of it, it would either draw from Shadow Lake or the canyon side. So again, it was kind of a big puzzle that played out, and again, the great news is the fire teams did amazing work, both the state and the Park City Fire. They were able to knock it down, get it contained, and the helicopter was released by 4 o'clock that day.
Yeah, the water came from Shadow Lake and then the snowmaking ponds?
Or? No, so the water actually ended up coming from the canyons ponds. Not even the snowmaking side. There's a couple other ponds up there in kind of the colony side. And again, right, like it was actually great to see the community come together. Mountain Trails helped us out on the closure side. Every single trail user we spoke to got it, right? They understood it. It was just one of those things that it was truthfully one of those incidents that worked out well. I mean, truthfully, all the pieces came together. And again, you always have to be careful what you manifest, because the city is doing extensive fuels work at the bottom of Thanes Canyon. That was an area that was identified in our community wildfire risk assessment to say, hey, this is an area we want to make sure that there's a lot of dead and dying trees. It's thick. It's overgrown. That's why we had that Armstrong closure. So, again, it was kind of the timing worked out well. The city's fuel project below it is actually exactly why we're doing these style pieces, right? You have a lightning strike, you have one of these issues. How can we kind of reduce the risk around our urban interface?
Okay, and I am going to have David Tellian, and I know who's the contractor on that project, as well as others, on later in the month to talk more about that. But I think we just got lucky here, right? Because it had just rained. And we've had such a windy summer, and the winds are calm.
Exactly, right? Thank goodness that this didn't happen before we started getting the monsoonal rains, because I think it could have been different. And again, you don't want to be just, you know, doom and gloom all the time. And again, that's why we have these professional staff. That's why we could tie in quickly with Park City Mountain. They had some great teams out there as well. Park City Fire, our police department, Basin jumped in, Mountain Trails jumped in. And again, it was just kind of saying, hey, we can now... You know, if you were to ask me a week ago, hey, could you shut down the Park City Trail side with 3 people? We would have been like, huh, well, we could maybe figure that out. And then again, right, like this is where it goes to the longer term strategy with the wildland urban interface piece. That's why you see the city doing a major project within Thanes. We just wrapped up about 80 acres between Thanes Canyon and Iron Mountain. There's 3,000 piles of wood that we're getting ready to burn to do the fuels reduction side. And again, if people say, you know, that's why the city offers free WUI inspections. If you just reach out to our building department, they'll come up. Kimmy and Sherry love coming up, engaging with folks and kind of understand these things. And so, yeah, it's just kind of that longer term strategy of how can we reduce our risk? And again, not live in fear, but say, hey, we can start taking active steps over the long term to make sure we're reducing the risk and give us a fighting a chance.
Yeah, will those 3,000 piles get burned this year, or do you wait a year to dry them out?
It'll be a mix. So we're actually going to work some innovation into it as well. We're going to be creating something called biochar, which will help soil improvement, soil retention as well. Again, you can't really turn it into lumber. You can't even turn it into toothpicks. So we're going to be working with Dave and his crew. We've got an external grant as well to say, hey, can we turn this into a soil amendment? What can we do to chip it? What can we do to... We're going to be trying a bunch of different concepts. The Thanes Canyon piece is a key ingress egress for Park City Mountain, right? If you get injured, bottom of King Con, they can haul you out that way. But again, it was also identified by the city of saying, hey, this is kind of our highest risk area. So that's why we spent a lot of resources and time in there to get it cleaned up. And another really kind of quick note is it's not just doing fuels reduction there. We're able to hammer the noxious weeds. And then also we're doing some riparian habitat work. We worked with an external ecologist to help us understand how can we make this better wildlife habitat? How can we actually kind of revive that watershed? So again, when you go ride Armstrong even next year, it'll actually feel more of a lush and healthy ecosystem that you ride through.
So all said and done, how much actually burned?
It was just, I believe it was reported about a half acre, about 20 trees-ish. You can never get the exact count, but talking to the crews up there, we got up there around noon with the Park City staff, Andy and Mike, and we met with the state and Battalion Chief McKay up there. They had it fairly well contained, but again, afternoon thunderstorms and all these other things, it was just like, hey, we can, again, a day closure up there. Luckily, we have a vast trail system, so people were able to kind of bop around and go elsewhere. It just jumped into a few trees, and again, because it wasn't windy, because it had been wet, it rained, it turned into a nothing burger, which is always great, because it's always hard to... you always hear about the bad things. This one is a celebrative, like, hey, it was, everything came together the way it should have.
Yeah, so great lessons, and yeah, unfortunate good conditions.
Yeah, truthfully, it was a great kind of drill to understand what we would do and how we could kind of work these contingencies and keep people safe. Because again, with over 1,000 people hitting the trails early morning, you know, I'd much rather do a broader closure instead of getting people up there and then how the heck do you communicate outwards of trail closures and all this other stuff and pull those people back down.
Okay, in the few minutes, Adam, I wanted to talk a little about the remediation work that has mm-hmm. been done in the area by United Park City Mines. And again, I think there's so much confusion about this project, but the work that is being done is outside the Park City limits?
Both in and out, but a lot of it's inside Park City.
Okay, which is why the city had to offer a
excavation permit.
Excavation permit. Okay. Yeah. Is that the only role the city has in this project?
It is. The project's being overseen by the EPA. We don't have any other involvement in that project. There haven't been any plans shared with us beyond the request for the grading and excavation in terms of, you know, is this related to development? Development's significantly restricted on that parcel. So we're not privy to any plans that nothing's been shared in terms of something development related. The uses are restricted to essentially what's on site at the Richardson Flat Park and Ride. Even to, you know, we've looked at those restrooms out there, the Port-a-Johns, and we've said, is there a way to get some better, more efficient, nicer restrooms? And even that work is not allowed under the Flagstaff Agreement. Very limited in terms of what can actually be done at this stage. There is ongoing litigation. There's an attempt to adjust that. But as of right now, the way that it stands and the way that we continue to operate is under the terms of the agreement.
Okay, do you know the basis of the lawsuit? I mean, what are they arguing over? Whether or not they do have development rights?
I think that's the crux of the question, yeah.
Okay, but as we understand it, there was no development. It was going to be recreation, fields, or open space.
That's correct.
All right. So they're also working on the property adjacent, which is in Wasatch County,
mm-hmm.
or Hideout. I mean, so I guess Hideout has the...
Summit County, Hideout. The Summit County portion of Hideout. Yes, it's a little confusing out there, but they do have plans.
All right. Mm-hmm. So if they were to bring some development plans in that area that is within the Park City limits, I mean, that's something the Planning Commission, City Council would actually go through?
Only if the Flagstaff Agreement were amended, and I just couldn't speak to the possibility of that amendment getting approved. So I think there's a lot of work that would have to be done, and I couldn't even say that that's a possibility at this point.
Okay. Real quick, what's the latest with the 5 acres and Bryn Shore development? What happens with this?
Yes, still working through the Planning Commission. There have been a lot of questions that the Planning Commission has asked the developer to consider. They've made multiple revisions to their plans. They're bringing another set back to the Planning Commission on September 9th. That's a work session. At that meeting, this upcoming Planning Commission meeting, September 9th, there is no public hearing. Of course, you can always email your public comments to planning@parkcity.gov. They will be received, put into the record. But for this meeting, there's no public hearing. It's just an update on the questions and requests that the Planning Commission has made of the developer, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay, and can you give us an update on the 248 tunnel? This is, at this point, it's just kind of not happening?
What the council directed us to do when we brought this back a few months ago, the price on that project has just increased extraordinarily to the point where we said, we need to look at alternatives. We need to see if there's a more cost-effective way to do this and to serve the need that we see there with so much pedestrian traffic. $17 million price tag just wasn't going to get it done. What we're in the process of doing is what we call a warrant study, and it looks to see if a traffic signal would be appropriate. Now, traffic signals, they have their own pros and cons in terms of how they affect traffic, but they certainly can mitigate the pedestrian crossings and things like that. So we're trying to determine if a signal will be warranted at Homestake, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, so it's kind of back to the drawing board at this point?
I would say we're waiting on the results of that warrant study, and then we decide what the next steps are.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Adam Lenhardt, Park City Manager, Luke Carton, Sustainability Director. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Friends of the Park City Library will host its Miner's Day used book sale later this week. And in the studio with details, I have two members of the Friends, Rachel Solman and Kathy Lanigan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the sale is for 2 days. Exactly. Kathy, you want to tell us when and where?
Sunday is our opening day. We have the first 2 hours are exclusive for FOL members. You can buy a membership at the door, of course. And then we go from eight till four on Sunday and 10 to four on Monday.
Okay. Again, you will be doing that preview then for members. And what's a membership cost, Rachel?
So we ask members to start at $25. It's voluntary, however much you can give. So we have some folks who give $25. We have some who give $100, some who give $500. So it really is based on people's ability to give. So yes, the member preview will be from 8 to 10, and then the general public can come in at 10. And then we will, again, on the final day on Monday, September 7th, have the tote bag happy hours, which is from 2 to 4. And that's for folks to fill a tote bag for $15, which we provide. And then they can fill it with as many books as they can fit. And they are large tote bags, so they fit a lot of books.
Okay. So you only need a membership to get those first 2 hours. Otherwise, it's open to everyone.
Exactly.
Yes. All right.
Exactly.
The library will be closed on Miner's Day. So, but you've got the keys, and this will be happening all on the third floor again?
That's exactly right, up in the community room. So
after the parade, during the 4th of July parade, the sale, after that, we were packed. People came down after the parade. It was hard to move around in there, and so we're hoping that we'll see the same thing after the celebrations on Main Street on Monday.
It really felt like a local party. It was really fun.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you just hosted a sale over the 4th of July
holiday.
And I mean, you still have books to sell.
We have so many books. In fact, we have this new collections table, which is antique or rare books that people donate. And we looked at each other and said, I don't think we can charge $2 for this. So those are $5, and it was a smash success. It's really kind of one of the fun treasure hunt-like experiences. So yeah, we have plenty of books.
The other thing we've noticed with the changes over at the Summit County Library is they're not taking donations. And so our donations this summer have been almost overwhelming for the volunteers. The donation area has just been full to the brim since our last sale. So we have a lot of books.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about the prices for the books, besides the $5 collections.
So all children's books are $1. Puzzles and games are $2. Adult paperbacks are $2. Adult hardcover are $3. And then, as Kathy mentioned, our new collections are $5.
Now, are these the same prices as what you sell the books for in your friend's corner there?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So for those who may not know, right near the information desk on the first floor of the library is a wall that's the Friends of the Library wall, and there's a little cash box there or a Venmo code. And we stock that, and we switch out books weekly. So lots of new titles that come up on that area.
Is that what do you focus on for that
those
area?
Those are all categories. We have a whole section that's children's, then we have a section that's sort of cooking and gardening, and then the rest is fiction, nonfiction, history. It's really everything. But we do also sell puzzles and games there.
Okay. And then you'll have leftover books. Will you save those for next year or?
Not this time. And the reason for that is that we do not have a lot of storage space. And what Rachel said, we're getting so many donations, which we love. Don't keep them coming. But we have very little storage space, and we have to get all the way to 4th of July. So we have a book liquidator who comes up, and he takes them, and he resells them and then liquidates them.
All right. Does he pay you for them?
No.
Okay. Not even a percentage of the sales?
No. I don't think he makes enough to pay us and cover his costs as well. So.
All right. Well, this is all about purchasing items, unbudgeted items, for the library itself. Can you talk about some of what the donations have paid for over the last year?
Absolutely. One of the things we're really excited about right now is we've just been given a grant by the Promontory Foundation. So in collaboration with the Promontory Foundation grant, we're funding three youth and child programs. That's really fun. It's everything from enhancing the collections for children and youth, but also Crafternoons is a program that Katrina runs that is paid for through funds that we raise in collaboration now with the Promontory Foundation.
Okay, and what are some of the other purchases you've made?
So yeah, since we talked with you before, early in the summer, we have funded a memory station, which is being installed at the library. This is a station that allows patrons to preserve memories, family history, and stories in a digitized format. And so there are other libraries that have installed these memory stations. It's great for all ages, kids who want to save their grandmother's things or people who have some family history that they want to digitize. So that'll be going in the fall. The library did research around the around the stations, and the librarians will be able to assist folks in using that. So we're excited about that.
So what are we talking? I mean, just 2D objects? I mean, like photos and papers?
Photos and actual memories.
Letters, artifacts, you can... Word. And there is one librarian in particular who's really well-versed in this who can aid anyone who wants to use it.
Okay, so when will that get installed?
So that's in the next couple weeks. They're working on that, so it will be early fall. And then another thing that I know we talked about earlier this summer as well is the One Book, One Community. And we funded the speaker in conjunction with the Summit County Library. And we had more than 250 people attend that. For those who attended, you will, I'm sure, agree with me. She was an amazing speaker.
Yeah, great book choice, too. Mm-hmm.
This year, too, we're funding the keynote speaker for the Utah Humanities Book Festival, early October.
Okay, maybe we're going to line her up later on.
Yes, yes.
What's on the wish list from the library for this year?
Boy, what's on the wish list? More professional development. The ability to send their librarians to continuing education, conferences, library conferences, that's definitely something they care about.
Okay. Do you have any other events planned this year?
Live PC, Give PC is coming right up. So after this, the next big event for us is Live PC, Give PC. We, of course, will be very involved in the Utah Humanities Book Festival, but that's not a fundraising event. That's just we work to support the librarians.
Okay. Again, the Friends of the Park City Library hosting its Minor Day Used Book Sale Sunday, 8 to 4, 8 to 10 if you are a member, otherwise 10 to 4, and then Monday also 10 to 4. So stop by after the parade.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Kathy Lanigan and Rachel Solomon. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Some Park City trails will be closed this week for fire mitigation and maintenance. In Park City, crews are closing trails in the Thames Canyon area for some prescribed burns. Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony says that Kimball Junction's Runamuck Trail will also be closed weekdays starting September 2nd for trail resurfacing.
They will open it on weekends, but until the construction is complete, it will be closed during the weekdays.
Work is expected to continue through September. Anthony also advises trail users that the point-to-point bike race will bring hundreds of people to Park City's trails from Round Valley to the UOP on Saturday. Well, the Utah State Board of Education approved a $60,000 study to examine the book buying process for school librarians. The Salt Lake Tribune reports the board voted to advance the school library materials acquisition and procurement review at its meeting August 6th. Board member Emily Green proposed the review. She claims pornographic novels are making it into Utah's public schools despite the state's strict sensitive materials law. The review will involve three phases: a fiscal analysis, a technical review of supply chain logistics and procurement contracts, and a statewide examination of library staff qualifications, according to board documents. President of the Utah Library Association, Shauna Christensen, pushed back and defended the school library staff. She says they follow the law and argued the money would be better spent toward literacy efforts in the state. And Summit and Wasatch counties were included on a list of the nation's top 15 rural communities for 2026. The annual award from Expansion Solutions magazines highlights rural communities that support business growth and building opportunities for residents. Communities were evaluated through an analysis of economic performance, corporate investment activity, workforce strength, infrastructure readiness, and long-term competitiveness. Summit and Wasatch counties were recognized for their respective housing and tourism efforts. The top 15 list also included counties from Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. San Pete County in Utah was also recognized on the list.